biggest scary Halloween day, scream face. Bloody Mary, secondary, Jordan, mean face. A-Rod got him offside, free.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on a victory Monday in Wisconsin with the Packers defeating the Dallas Cowboys in overtime. And we haven't had a victory Monday in a while, so I'm pretty excited about that. Also excited to be joined by Paul Noonan, who covers the Packers for Acme Packing Company, hosts the weekly podcast Reporting is Eligible on the Packers, and Milwaukee's Tailgate podcast on the Brewers. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I too am happy to have a victory Monday for the first time in seemingly ages. I'm not sure how to react anymore.
Yeah, it's like a new experience all over again to watch the Packers win.
That it is extra sweet against Mike McCarthy too, and at home to boot, and with a. We've been waiting for these breakout performances, I think, all year from some of the young players, and it just hasn't happened. And to get it sort of in this moment against the old coach was nice to see as well.
Yeah, I think it's possible we could be looking back at this game as the highlight of the season, beating the Dallas Cowboys and Mike McCarthy in overtime at Lambeau. That's a pretty fun one. And like you said, some great performances from some of the young players. Christian Watson, holy cow. Three touchdowns, however many yards. Incredible game.
Yeah, this is what we've been waiting for him the whole time. And he went to a smaller school, a division, I forget what they call them in college now. Let's call it Division II, just for the sake of moving on. And so didn't really face the best competition in college, but is one of the best athletes, honestly, ever to play the position of wide receiver. When we kind of scout people, we use a metric that kind of combines all the athletic profiles that you do at the combine. And there's only been 11 receivers that have his combination of size, speed, and agility.
Ever? And you're talking ever? Wow.
Well, okay. I think we go back, let's say the combine era. Yeah, so like 30 years or so. Like the only guys that really have been more athletic than him are like Julio Jones and Calvin Johnson, Javon Walker, former Packer. But he's really up there in the upper like 0.001% of athletes. And it's just a matter of, you know, sort of refining the soft skills for him more than anything coming out of a small school.
Yeah. And he's had some injuries. I know, I believe there was a concussion that he had suffered early in the season here. So he seems to be healthy. He had a pretty good game. It seems to be in much better health.
He better be healthy pulling off the backflip. You've got to be 110% if you're going to do that as your celebration. So he looks healthy. That also, by the way, was a knock on him out of college. He was very frequently injured. He's had a few surgeries before coming into the NFL. And so it's something to keep an eye on. But when he's healthy, there's nobody faster than that guy. And he showed it off for the first time all year.
Yeah, caught a couple of those deep balls. The one kind of felt like a course correction in a lot of ways. You know, just kind of finally getting that performance, but also catching the deep ball. I think we all have that image of that first play of the season where he dropped that deep ball that probably would have gone for like a 75-yard touchdown in the opener against Minnesota. And now, you know, coming back against Dallas and having this big performance is huge.
Yep. I always wonder if that would have changed the season completely if he would have caught that first ball, because I do feel like they sort of had in their minds like, okay, he's young. He had some drop problems in college. More than anything, I would just say that his hands are not a strength. He will catch what's thrown to him, but he's not going to go and like fight guys like Randy Moss did and just take it away from them. And I think when they saw that first one, they just kind of like, okay, you're on the shelf for a little bit. We'll work on it in practice. And if he hauls it in, I wonder if they just sort of live with the mistakes and then are better off for it. And we get more of these games earlier.
Yeah, who knows? Hard to say. And I think, you know, with some of the other injuries that they've had in the receiving core, you know, it made the first half of the season really difficult to get any kind of rhythm, any kind of consistency. Rodgers did not really look like Rodgers for the past few weeks. He started to look like himself last night, though.
Yeah, this was by far his best game of the season. And I think we maybe need to give a little more credence to his thumb injury, which we should have anyway. Like, we've seen Brett Favre play a whole season with a bad thumb, and it was his worst season other than when he was an old man. As a quarterback, thumbs do a number on quarterbacks throwing the ball. They just do. I think that's fully healthy. He had some zip last night that he hasn't had all year. He was super accurate. He looked like old Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he looked like young Aaron Rodgers.
He looked like the reigning MVP. He looked like...
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And if they have this guy the rest of the season, I mean, sky's the limit. It's just, it hasn't shown up until today.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe a little bit extra fired up with going against his former coach. What'd you make of Mike McCarthy's return to Lambeau?
I think he's done a nice job of sort of mediating his presence. So Mike McCarthy, first of all, was an outstanding coach with the Packers. We should be clear about that. And his game planning got a little old towards the end. It got predictable. And when the Packers started sort of had to pay Aaron more and lose some receiver talent and, you know, have one or two good receivers instead of four or five good receivers, his stuff didn't work as well. And it probably was time for a change. Matt LaFleur's offense is completely different than Mike McCarthy's is. But I think McCarthy did a nice job reinventing himself a little bit. And Dallas is a very different kind of team than any of his Packer teams. They are a legitimately great defense, making that performance all the more impressive from Green Bay last night. And they really are kind of more of a ball control offense that is capable of hitting a few big plays and leaning on, you know, one or two good receivers, not the four or five that he kind of needed in Green Bay to have it be explosive. He listens to his assistants more. He's a little more humble. And I think he's having a very nice back half of his career. So it was nice to see him, and, you know, no ill will towards Mike McCarthy. I like to see old coaches learn new tricks more than anything. And I think he actually has.
Yeah, it's nice to see that evolution. And, you know, I was somebody who was pretty critical of McCarthy in the later years in Green Bay and, you know, welcomed the change to LaFleur and kind of turning the page. But it is nice to see him have some success in Dallas, piloting a different type of offense than the, you know, stacked Greg Jennings, James Jones, Michael Finley, Donald Driver group that he had when he won the Super Bowl in Green Bay. Okay, so I know you're an analytics guy. You go through a lot of these things. Can you explain to me what in the world happened in the final 2 minutes of that game? I could not make sense of it. It felt like, you know, one of my knocks on McCarthy in the past was his game management, late game management, timeouts and all that. And last night we just had, it felt like, okay, 2 minute drill, Aaron Rodgers, let's go. And all of a sudden it just kind of went sideways and nobody did anything. And so I need to understand what happened here.
I think that usually there are two sides to every story, and we saw Aaron Rodgers visibly upset with Matt LaFleur after that sequence and drop some colorful language on him. I think in this case, Aaron's right. That was Matt LaFleur getting overly conservative, and I think what happened is that they wanted to ensure they didn't give Dallas any more time. They didn't want to go like three and out with three passes, give the ball right back to them, potentially in good field position for a field goal. So they wanted to get it the clock down to a position where they knew there would either be a field goal for them or the clock would run out. And I think they did it. They just ran into a situation where it was a little too far on both sides, that they ran too much clock and they got themselves into a poor down and distance situation simultaneously, which then made Matt LaFleur kind of go into a turtle shell. And that's ridiculous. You have Aaron, you can pick up 10, 15 yards when you need to. You've done that all game, and he was uncomfortable with it. I think that is what happened there.
Yeah, it just seems like he got too cute. You know, you got overthought it. Oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's just, you have Aaron Rodgers, just let him air it out for 2 minutes and just get down to the end zone, get into field goal range, do what he's done so many times.
Yeah, there's no reason to run out of time there, and there's no reason that you need to do anything weird on offense. I think if they would have actually just stayed in their standard offense, even with running the ball a couple of times and then just mixed in passes, that they could have moved into field goal range pretty easily without the clock becoming a factor on either side of the ball. And they just overthought it, got cute, and messed it up. I'm actually surprised Aaron didn't go a little rogue there, because he's prone to doing that. He's not above calling those kinds of things. Maybe with some more experienced receivers out there, that would have happened, actually. But I'm glad it worked out in the end. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous to go to overtime where everything resets to 50-50. When you have the ball, you have the advantage. You should take advantage of it, especially with a lot of time on the clock.
Right. And how many times have we seen over the years that, you know, we go to overtime, we go to some final stage of the game when, and we watch Aaron Rodgers frustrated on the sidelines, not being able to do anything as the defense kind of lets the game go away.
Which almost happened in this overtime. Dallas got the ball first and they had to stop them on a fourth down to get it back.
Yeah. It got a little tense there, but I'm, you know, obviously we're glad with the results. Yeah. I think we can talk a little bit after the break about some of, you know, just like going forward and, you know, where the season stands, kind of big picture. But what are some of the other kind of takeaways that you have from this game?
I do think it's worth paying attention to Rudy Ford, not just because he made those two big splash plays on his interceptions, but as a possibly difference-making player going forward. Rudy Ford's on the team to play special teams. When the Packers changed their special teams coordinator in the offseason to Rich Bisaccia, he brought in a bunch of guys who are just good at special teams, Rudy Ford being one of them, to try and increase their play from last year, which was awful. And Rudy Ford's one of those, but I think... In Darnell Savage, who he basically replaced in that position, you have a guy who's basically the same level of athleticism as Savage, a little bigger, and clearly putting forth more effort. That's a guy that is a special teamer, a rah-rah guy who wants to go out and kill people, and who is finishing off every single tackle perfectly. Savage is like 20 pounds lighter than him, definitely not getting his hits in, his licks in as well. And it showed in the physicality up front. It showed that Dallas still ran well, but Ford is a much more willing tackler than Savage. But more than anything, just more aggressive breaking on the ball. They need a guy to do that back there. And I think Ford will probably stick there while they try and mix Savage into the slot a little bit with Stokes out for the year. Mm-hmm. So I think they may actually get a sort of lucky upgrade with Ford kind of showing up and being that aggressive force that they've been missing.
That's pretty interesting. He did have a great game. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of how they readjust the defense, given that injury to Stokes, given the, you know, the injury to Rashawn Gary. You know, it's a different landscape for him.
Yeah, the defense really is a totally different animal without Gary and with people kind of shifting in and out that it was before. I do think they'll have some trouble generating pass rush, and that was a problem for them last night. But they're decent enough with Preston and mixing in blitzes that I think they'll be okay. Not that you can absorb Rashawn Gary being out.
Yeah, he was maybe their best defensive player to start the season.
He absolutely is their best defensive player.
Yeah.
But I think that they can be creative enough that it doesn't hurt them too bad going forward.
I'm curious, guys, who is the player who did the backflip in the end zone?
That was Christian Watson.
Oh, that was Watson.
Yes, it was.
Does that not just make... like the head coach and all the coaches just go nuts. So don't land on your head, kid. That's all I could think of was, oh my God. I mean, obviously they're spectacular athletes and they're in great shape, but doesn't that just put chills down some of those people's spines?
Absolutely. It does. Especially for a guy who has suffered several hamstring injuries already. Like Christian Watson has lots of soft tissue leg injuries, and anytime you see something like that, it brings me back to like everybody who's Detroit had a player, I can't remember who it was, a linebacker who famously mocked the belt and blew out his knee mocking the belt. And you always worry about that kind of thing happening when people do extra extravagant celebrations. So I was holding my breath when I saw it too. Glad it worked out. He is a phenomenal athlete, but yeah, I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, it's the Detroit example from the belt one is just like an is such an all time one. It's
I'd never heard that story before. Yeah. It's not hilarious, but wow.
Yeah, that was kind of the start of the legend of don't mock the belt, I think.
Yeah, and it continues. Have we seen it at all this year? I don't know.
I don't think we have. I don't think there's been any belt mocking this year. I feel like that's usually. In a closer, the Packers have been weirdly sort of either non-competitive or in, you know, games with lesser talent. You're not going to, you get that from stars and things like that. So I think that's probably why, but no more belt mocking. Maybe everybody has learned.
Yeah. Well, not, they weren't treating the Packers the same way. So we are coming up to our break here. Once we get back from the break, we can kind of talk about the big picture of where the Packers sit going into the rest of the season. This is Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company joining us here. I am Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in for Kristen Bride. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Simple fact of plainly obvious to see. We're gonna kick your collective posterior.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry. Jane is, as always, just killing it on the music, bringing us back from the break here. Phenomenal stuff.
Weird Al. Gotta love Weird Al.
Gotta love
Weird Al.
Big Weird Al fans over here. So we're talking during this hour to Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company. We're talking, it's a Victory Monday in the state of Wisconsin. So we're talking Packers today. They beat the Dallas Cowboys in overtime. And we're going to talk a little big picture about the season here. The Packers are 4-6. They just had their first win in a while. And they're way behind the Minnesota Vikings in the division. The Vikings are good, I think. They beat the Buffalo Bills yesterday. Are the Vikings good? I guess we can start there.
They're kind of not. they are very lucky. They're not bad. They're averagey. If you look at sort of a lot of their underlying stats, like points scored, point against, and some of the per like yards per play stats, they're not that much better than the Packers at all. They just have had a lot of bounces go their way this year. On Sunday, they had the biggest bounce ever go their way when Buffalo just fumbled for no reason with the game essentially over and lost it. They are very likely to disappoint in the playoffs. They'll probably run away with this just because they have such a huge lead, and they'll probably get a very high seed in the playoffs. But it's not that different to Vikings team from what we've seen in the past, and they're about as good as those teams. They're not an elite NFC team by any stretch. So they probably will go away. Packers probably can't catch them. They're too far gone at this point. Too many games there. They're not that good a team. They are not as good as the record says. So
not truly the 8-1 one of the best records in the league. Riding a 7-game winning streak. Like it's weird to see this from a Vikings team that I didn't really think much of going into the season. But I guess here they are, leading the division. I imagine they will probably, barring a Viking style late season collapse, will probably are in pole position to win the division, but maybe not. I had a friend of mine, who one of my college buddies who's a Vikings fan, had a very excited Facebook post after that game yesterday, and so I had to jump into the comments and tell him it must be November, because that's the most exciting time of the year for Vikings fans, typically is in the middle of it, not at the end.
Yeah, it's fine to be excited about your team, but it's good to have sort of a realistic vision of them too. And the Vikings are very likely to disappoint everybody, as they so often do, once they actually get into the playoffs. They are far and away worse than the Eagles, I would say the Cowboys as well. One of the underperforming teams in the league is the 49ers, who have one of the best defenses in the league, a ton of good skill position players, not a great quarterback, but have very, very much underperformed what their underlying performance was too. If they happen to meet in the playoffs, I would say the 49ers would be prohibitive favorites against the Vikings, even though their records couldn't be more different.
Interesting. Yeah, they had that. They had a nice win. I watched a little bit of that that Sunday night game. The 49ers had a nice win there. They have a good team.
They do.
But 5-4, not exactly world beaters, behind the Seattle Seahawks in the NFC West. No one saw that coming.
That is weird.
That is weird. So when we look at the kind of like the bigger picture playoff landscape for the Packers, you know, what's their path to the playoffs? If it's not the division, if the Vikings are, as we expect, an 8-1 team, Packers are a 4-6 team, it's going to be a tough one. Packers are probably gunning for that wild card. You know, what's some of their competition there?
So they are behind the eight ball a little bit. They do need one or two teams to, well, you need one team to collapse. And the Seahawks aren't a bad bet there, although their defense has actually picked up lately. That was a weakness earlier. But Geno Smith, all props to Geno Smith for turning his career around and having a phenomenal season. but he's not as good as what he's shown there so far. So there, but more than that, the most likely thing to have happen is the NFC East. The NFC East, the Eagles are good, and the Cowboys, even though we just beat them, are still a good team. The Giants are not. I know that the Giants beat the Packers. They hold a tiebreaker over the Packers. That's just not a very good team. They're much like the Vikings in having gotten lucky quite a bit. And if you're looking for a team with the potential to collapse down the stretch because they do play two good teams in their division and have a pretty hard schedule, that's probably your team. The problem is that loss does give them an extra game over the Packers, but that would be the team you want to keep in mind to collapse. And the Packers might be able to pull this off because the rest of their schedule is not too bad. They have two hard games. They play at Philadelphia and they play at Miami. Those are tough, but the rest of this is very manageable. And if they split those, they'll be in pretty good shape. So there's possibility. The 49ers are the other ones that you can maybe catch, but they have a pretty easy schedule and they are a pretty good team. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo is bad. That always gives you a chance that they're going to drop a whole bunch in a row, but that defense, I think, is going to make it tricky. The Giants are a bad team. They're a legit, not good team with a lot of wins. And if anybody's going to fall apart, that's going to be the one.
So we've got the Packers play at home against Tennessee on Thursday night. They go to Philadelphia the week after. They go to Chicago, where Bears owner Aaron Rodgers has had some success there over the years. And then they go to the bye week. And so if they can get close to 500, you know, before the bye week, sets them up to maybe have a nice little run because they got a lot of home games in December.
They do. They'll have a good chance. And they have sort of two little byes packed in here because after this Thursday game, they have 10 days off to get people healthy. And then they get the actual bye a few weeks after that. So if they can be in contention by the bye, they'll be, I think, as healthy as they possibly can to run out the rest of the year. So that's good, too. And they should beat Tennessee. Tennessee is in first place in their division, but it's one of the worst divisions in the history of football. It's a game they should win. I'm a little worried about it for a couple of reasons. One of which is the one thing Tennessee's good at is stopping the run. They have, by a lot of metrics, the best run defense in football. And when the Packers can't run, things can go badly for them. Now, on the plus side, Tennessee is the worst team at defending deep passes in the league. And so this is a maybe good post-Christian Watson game to be having when you can actually use him against them. And then, you know, the Packer run defense is terrible. And Derrick Henry versus the Packer run defense is also quite worrisome as well. So I could see how this one could go south. But if you can just sort of load up on those two things, they should be okay.
Yeah. And Tennessee's, it seems like they seem to eke out a lot of wins because they're very well coached, too. And they seem to have like really smart clock management and things like that. So that could be a tricky one.
They do. I actually think because they run and play defense, they're less prone to get come from behind upsets. And they do have an absurd record in one score games over the last 3 years. Now they're like 18-5, which is ridiculous. That just doesn't happen in football. So that you want to call that luck or just good planning. It's something to pay attention to. You don't want to fall behind. If you fall behind against Tennessee, things can get bad for you.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be an important home game, especially with a tough one against Philadelphia after that. Paul Noonan, thank you so much for joining the show today, talking about the Packers' exciting win over Dallas and talking about the big picture for this team going forward. They could make the playoffs. I wouldn't have said that a week ago.
Yeah, me too. I thought they were dead. It's a long shot, but they might do it. Thanks, guys.
Well, thanks a lot. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back. When you know that you're gonna lose.